Hello, everybody. Welcome back. This is Julie Knutson with the podcast Training the Pointing Labrador, episode number 124. Today's episode is going to be a combination of a new topic, one that I wrote about a little bit on the private Facebook page, on the shoulds of dog training, and then I'm going to answer some listener questions as well. And it's interesting as this podcast has been evolving, as I get to know some of my listeners out there, it's a real pleasure. I'll tell you, I have a wide variety of people listening to this. It's not all Pointing Lab people, and you know, I never intended it to just be that. I really, you know, that's where that's where I've derived the greatest benefit from the dog world is my activities in the world of Pointing Labs. But my activity in the dog world has been that and a whole lot more. And I respect, you know, all the other breeds and the other things that people do. And a lot of people have been sharing some of that. And I really enjoy it. So questions that are outside of just maybe some of the specifics I go over are always welcome. If I can't answer something, I will certainly be the first person to tell you that. But I just want to kind of extend a thank you and some gratitude to the interesting and kind of significant number of people that are out there, you know, fitting this a little bit into their day. And so, you know, thank you for taking the time and listening and I hope finding something, you know, of value, at least if nothing else, make you think a little bit more about some of the work that you're doing. So, you know, I just do have the best crowd. And then, of course, I have a bunch of the homegrowns. You know, they're all pain in the necks, every one of them. But they listen to these things and then always accuse me of doing it about them. And maybe every now and then I have. But anyway, this has been a blast to do. And the popularity of it is kind of surprising. I'm not doing the advertising on here. Although, good Lord, the formats, they really push you to monetize everything. Which, you know, I certainly understand why they monetize everything, but maybe I'm just too old-fashioned. I'm just not doing that. Anybody that wants to support any of the things I do, look at the video series, look at the book, in terms of supporting work like that, but I'm not going to have advertisement or you have to pay to get this without, you know, all that kind of stuff. I'd rather just use this opportunity to help the serious people out there with their dogs. So, that said, what I want to talk about first, and this is my chosen topic before I answer topics chosen by other people, was the shoulds of dog training. And what really sparks this for me is because, again, I train other people's dogs all the time. And I, you know, work 6 days a week with them, weather and, you know, life allowing, and do the very best I can to get them one, to get the basic responsiveness and all that kind of stuff built in, and then to go on and work on the behaviors that people are interested in. And so when people come back and they've had their dog somewhere, right? And gosh, how many times I've been through this, they've had their dog and I'm supposed to know what I'm doing, right? Oh, okay, let's go and see our dog and work with them. And the first thing, again, that people always want to know is, okay, so what commands do I give? And that always disheartens me a little bit. I know why it's like, because that's how I'm going to communicate with this dog, right? With these commands that you've taught them. And people believe that that's the way that we communicate. And it is the way that humans communicate. But dogs communicate, you know, by the sounds that we make and call words, and by a whole lot more. And so it's when you say, well, okay, you've trained my dog, so he should do heel and sit and do real good obedience with me, right? So what do I say? And, you know, always my answers are unsatisfying, is that they aren't going to do anything because you think they should, okay? And that's the whole should thing. So people come over, their dog's trained. So what should I say? And then what should the dog do? And so you've got all of these ideas about what is supposed to happen, what should happen. And so my whole point of this talk and what I wrote was that doesn't work. It just doesn't work. It doesn't work with human beings. And the should thing is just absolutely doesn't belong in dog training. And I'll give you just an example from my side of this. So I rarely train dogs that other people have trained. My thing is to build the dog from the beginning myself so that, you know, I understand every piece of them and I understand the dog really well and how they were taught and what they think and what their motivations are and all that stuff. Sometimes I get dogs in that have been trained by someone else. And right there, and I've learned this long ago, is, and let's say the dog was trained by someone that I know knows what they're doing. So I know that the dog, you know, should have certain skill levels and have had certain experiences and all this. I also know that I don't know anything about this dog. And so part of what I do is I make very few assumptions. So what I do when I get this dog is I may use the same words that this dog was trained with, but the dog doesn't know me. And so me just spewing out some words may not necessarily have the effect it should have, right? So what I do is, all right, I get this dog and I'll put on the leash and the choke chain and a dummy collar on them and I'll put that stuff on. And first thing I'm going to notice is, how do they act when I do that? I'm going to notice that. And if they're getting wild and crazy, I'm going to make them sit down and, you know, act like a trained dog. And then I'm going to go out and I'm going to have them do, I don't care, I got a dog that's already fully trained, already has, you know, big titles. And I'm going to go get the leash and choke chain and I'm going to just go do some basic obedience, heel and sit. And the first thing I'm going to do isn't find out what the dog does. I am going to communicate to this dog what my expectation is. So we're going to, when I say heel, you're going to walk with me. And when I say sit, you're going to sit with some sense of seriousness and significance about this. I'm not going to let them not do any of this. I'm not going to let them sit slowly. I'm not going to let them not walk with me at my pace. I'm not going to let them, you know, not come immediately when I call them or wheel around into heel position. I am going to make no assumptions about this dog, other than it has been trained and I know that it's going to understand the tools that I have and it will be familiar with the things that I say. I know that much, but I'm not going to make any other assumptions. So I'm going to make sure the dog understands when I say heel, you be at my side, moving or not moving. When I say sit, you drop that bottom. When I say here, you come directly to me and either sit or heel around into the heel position. And so I am going to show this dog, this is what I expect. These are my standards. This is how I communicate with you. And this is my degree of seriousness about this. And I'm going to require that you and I work together, right? There's no shoulds in there anywhere. I go in and proactively show the dog, all right, this is what we do. And then we expand over the next days as we can into more sophisticated skill sets that we work on. But the first thing I do is go, here's the deal between us. This is how I communicate and this is what I expect. So the reason I'm saying this, so when people come out to work with their dog that I've trained, and it should be doing all kinds of cool stuff, right? It should be doing this and that. And of course, the first thing I do is show them, yeah, look at all the cool stuff it does. And then when I hand it over to them, all of a sudden it's jumping on them if it used to do that, or it's sniffing on them, or it's kissing them, or it's looking in their pockets for whatever they brought. And the people are going, well, he shouldn't be doing this, should he? You know, the answer is, I don't know. This is something between the two of you. And so what people need to do is, instead of doing the should thing, well, shouldn't the dog do this? What word should I use so that he does everything right? Like, it isn't the word you use. It's what you communicate to this dog. What you show them are the expectations and the standards based on what they've already been taught. You can't expect something that you've never taught them. And show them that you are going to follow through on this. And there are no shoulds in any of this. And it goes all the way to the highest level of stuff. You know, just the highest level of stuff. So many times I've seen people go in an upland field with a pointing dog. You know, and the dog's supposed to be finished and just do everything correctly, and the dog goes out there and it maybe doesn't point, or it points and then busts a bird up, or maybe it chases it, or maybe it catches it, and you got electric collar button pushing, and you got whistling, and you got screaming, and you got, oh no, he should be what they should be doing. And again, the should, there's no place for should in there. There's just no place for should. If you went out in the upland field and this dog showed you that they're just doing whatever feels good, then you went into an upland field with a dog who believes that it could do whatever feels good. And so perhaps before allowing that to happen, if you went back and reviewed the fundamental behaviors, if you have them, in the, you stay in gun range without me constantly telling you. You know, if you go on point, you don't move again until I tell you, unless you're repositioning out of necessity, not out of desire to get closer. So if you go and instead of finding out, oh, look, not doing all these things I thought he should be doing, again, you've just let the dog know that, hey, you can get away with pretty much anything with me. So I don't care, you know, if we're talking about doing technical blinds, handling, triples, diversions, you know, poison bird blinds, all kinds of things. Don't get your dog off your pros truck and go, ah, he ought to know poison bird blinds, and just go out and start doing it, and then, you know, letting them have it when they aren't doing the things the way that they should. Right? Instead, as a good trainer of an animal for anything, instead of thinking, well, they should be good at this, they should know this, why don't you go back and review everything first and then go ahead and carry out what you're doing now that they do know what expectations are and you don't have the shoulds in there. You know what you've got and you know what they're thinking. And so that's probably one of the most dangerous things, detrimental. The should thing is just, you know, it's a waste of time and it doesn't work. And I really like using the people examples because when I wrote about this one, you know, he should be doing this. He should walk off leash with me without running around and sniffing. He should be. It's just the same thing as telling your significant other or close friend that they should weigh a little less, right? What's that going to do with your relationship, right? Very little positive. Very little positive. Or, you know, you should dye your hair red because you'd look a lot better. Okay, well, I'm thinking that not very many relationships are going to be improved by that. There's a should thing because you think something should be a certain way, and it causes a lot of problems on the other side of that. You know, you should have better vocabulary. You should be able to write where I can read it. You should. None of that is ever making things improved. And so it's very, very true in when we are working with our dogs, when we think they should be doing something and they don't, and then we're disappointed, and then they get deflated and confused going, I don't know. I don't know what's happening here. I'm just trying to survive it. And you lose a really excellent teaching dynamic and continuous improvement on the process that you're undertaking. And it's hard to catch those shoulds, especially if you are a shoulder. If you do shoulds a lot, it's going to be real hard in your dog training. But if you can start catching those things, and instead of being upset because they should do something or they should be this way or they should behave this way, instead go in ahead of it, show them what they should be doing, show them, teach them, make sure they fully understand it, then go into your situation. And the should thing is gone, and the dog and you have an excellent communication, and everything's understood. So if that's helpful to some people, but that should thing is every time I hear that, I just move over it because that's really not of any use to people. Okay, I had a really interesting question by someone who is not in the hunting dog game, who has a dog that is trained on the left side, to heel on the left side. You know, when they're coming in and told to heel, they heel over on the left side. Well, this person also wants to take the dog on trail runs and places where you're on, you know, maybe a single track trail or things like that. And the dog, if they're on the left side, are on the side of oncoming traffic on a narrow trail. And so what they wanted was to have the dog now to heel over onto the right side, and they've never done this before. So I know there's a whole field of, especially with the retriever people, competitive retriever people, to be heel both-sided, and there's a lot of people that do that. So for you, this question is beneath you. Move right on to the next thing. But what was interesting about this and why I'm putting it on here is because this is a 2-year-old dog, maybe a little bit over 2 years of age. So this dog has for 2 years and through a lot of training, everything is on the left side. That's your safe place. That's your place where you go. That's home right there, right? We're always over here on the left side. If we're walking or told to heel or bringing something back, we're on the left side. Now, under somewhat tense situations of passing oncoming people and other dogs and stuff while you're running on a trail, they want the dog on, when necessary, on the other side, on this right side. So I know, I started thinking about this, because when they're young and they don't know anything and you teach them two-sided, that's not too hard. But when they have been just thoroughly conditioned to be on the left side, how are you going to switch this over to the right? So, because she had a bunch of ideas. Well, how about if I do this and that? And a lot of it was with using pressure and, a heeling stick or a leash and, kind of getting after them. So I made another suggestion and wanted her to think it out a little bit before doing this. So you're going to teach this dog who has been taught this, that heel means be at my left side, stay over there on my left side. Now we're going to teach them to be on the other side. So instead of heel with a left hand and heel with a right hand, where I think in the that kind of Mike Lardy thing, when you tell them heel with the left hand and they go on the left side and heel with the right. Heel, the word heel means to this dog, be at my left side. So I suggested, let's break this down, like I do every dog problem in the world. Let's break this down to the simplest components, because that's the easiest way for a dog to learn something new, also to troubleshoot, of course, but to learn something new. So now this dog, this is going to be a completely different behavior. There will be times when I want you over on this other side and moving with me, or at least, if not moving, on that side. So we're not going to use the word heel, right? We're not going to use that, because that has been just strongly put in there with that's on a left side, whether your hand's up or not up or whatever. So I suggested first, let's come up with a new term for being on your right side, whatever term you want. You can say right. You can say Henry. Just come up with a term that means over on this side. So that's the very first thing to do. Let's don't start putting pressure and enforcement. Let's just do nothing but teaching. So my suggestion then was, so the dog's sitting in front of you, because that's a very easy way, right, to get them to go to a side. So have them sitting in front of you and then say the word right. And here's where I suggested using also a bacon bit. I'm a very anti-treat based trainer, but here to break a very strong train of thought, to break thinking. Food is very good at breaking thinking, unless you train with food and then you have nothing but food thinking. But if you train them to listen and respond, and now we've got to teach them a new thing that's different. And it would have gotten them in trouble in earlier days. You can't say heel and have them go over to your right side. They would have been in trouble for that. You have to go to the left side. So come up with the new term. Use the leash and maybe just move your body, turn, move around, get them on the right side, sat down with the leash. We're not enforcing. We're not using any kind of pressure. And then give her a bacon bit, some kind of treat. Preferably healthier than a bacon bit. And then do the same thing a few more times. So we're breaking, we're trying to disrupt the heel over to the left side, always is the default position. We're trying to break that thought, not correct it, not punish it, but break it. That's a very different thing. They aren't going to get in trouble for, there's just no trouble here. So instead of any trouble or any enforcement or anything that they're used to getting to get over on that left side, we're going to maybe move our column, you know, say right side, or whatever, say right, back up so that they move over there, move up forward, sit down, either or take off so they come up on your right side. They're going to be not wanting to do that. Just so take a step or two, sit down, give them a little treat. Right? Just do that, maybe depending on the dog's attention span. 2 or 3 times, maybe 4 or 5 times, and then stop. Because we're not trying so much to teach something right now, if you think about it. We're trying to hollow out an empty spot where there was nothing before. So, you know, everything was always default to the left side. Well, now we got something that's different from that. And so we're creating a new thought. And so we want that other one not to come up. So we're using different words, we're using different actions, and we're using something really different, because I know that dog was, because I trained the dog early on, so I know how it's trained. So we're not using any of those things, we're using something different in this treat. Well, that makes this right side thing really fun. And even though it's weird and it's not its default thing that it's done forever and ever and ever, it's really good to get over on that right side. Man, you get a little treat and they're all happy, and you know, there's no jerking on a choke chain or no popping with a healing stick or anything like that. We're just doing it. And then proceed. So do that for several more days until when you say right side, that little dog is whirling over there to that right side and sitting down in anticipation of, you know, getting that little treat for it. So what you want to do is create that response to your right side. Then when you have that, and now we're not going to give treats, maybe at the end, right? Maybe at the end of the thing. The dog's doing it all because when you're all done, it's going to get a little treat and then be done. Eventually, the treat thing will fade away, but we use that to completely change the thinking. So now when you're out there and you say right side, the dog will come running over and get onto your right side, right? And so when they do that, We only add one complication at a time. Even though this is a pretty trained dog, we're only going to add one complication at a time. So the first thing was just go, well, hey, sometimes you're on this other side, because that's going to make a dog left side, one side trained, kind of uncomfortable. That's why, again, we break the thinking with something we've never done before, you know, a goodie. So then when they start doing that, now we're going to add the complication of moving along with me on my right side. Now, depending on the dog, this is just going to be common sense stuff. What I told her was, have a treat in your hand or your pocket. So if for any reason walking along with you or running along with you on that side, it makes her nervous because we're not on the left side and we're always on the left side, then go along with that little treat in your hand like they do in the show ring. Go along with that little treat in your hand, and every 50 yards or 25 yards or whatever it takes, give her one. Until after just a couple days of that, I would assume, a few days, maybe a week, depends on the individual, till that dog can relax running along on that side. And when they do that, we don't keep giving them treats. So then when they will do that, now again, we're going to add our next level of complication. Let's have them run on the left side for however far you run, you know, 400 yards, half a mile, whatever, and then have them run on the right side. And if you just got to use your treats to transition them, then use the treats to transition them over there, and then have them run on the right side. So that all running on the right side is always a good thing. You're never in trouble. You're not on the wrong side. Until pretty soon the dog is comfortable with either way. So now when you're out running and there's people coming, you just say right side, dog goes over there, you got them out of the way, and you continue to go. But to break something as simple as that down like that, so that you can train it with the dog, they're not being any negative things. They're never making the wrong choice. They're never getting in trouble. We don't have punishment here. We're just going, here's a new deal. here's a new deal. And because it's been so ingrained to do something different from that, that's where you'll hear Julie Knutson talk about using treats, which is a very much a rarity. But we're going to break some thinking like we do with animals that are fear-based. You know, food can be a real good way to break the thinking on that. And when you've really honed in one kind of rule and now we're going to change it around or add something to it, then we're going to have to break the thinking. And not with pressure or punishment, which is something retriever people really are comfortable doing about everything. Instead, we're going to outthink them and alter their thinking in a positive way and get a new response out of a dog that knows how to be trained and has learned how to be trained. So I thought that was a real interesting question and kind of a good way to think about some of the things sometimes we try to do and not really sure what the approach should be. Alrighty, final question. These things do tend to kind of go on. I had two questions asked by two different people with regard to not themselves, but somebody else in their lives that were working with dogs. Of course, dogs are one of the great healers. their presence in our lives, some can be a real pain in the neck, just like people. But generally, what dogs that are in our lives are very much there for reasons greater than just sitting next to you while you're watching the evening news. Dogs serve purposes, I think, that are beyond what many of us ever realize. So these questions were with regard to having a young person in their life with some physical disabilities. So movement was not as easy as it was for somebody without these things. And so movement with the dog, and this was a field retriever, but so movement with this dog was going to be a little bit, they didn't know. Can this young person work with this dog even without being able to, you know, move through the field at a certain range or, you know, go throw stuff or whatever? That was one of the questions. And the other question was somebody with some learning disabilities. With some abilities that, so if you go, oh, this is what you do. You jerk up and you push down and so gathering the training information was more of a challenge than it would be for many of us. You know, and this is everywhere. This is so overwhelmingly common. All of us have weak spots and strong suits. But this is what I want to say about, for one, to these people that asked about this, can these people be effective and enjoy and get a lot out of the relationship with the dog, and can the dog be trained? Absolutely. Probably beyond what many of us realize. Yes, they can. Because a person cannot move the way the majority of other people move, does not mean that a dog cannot fully grasp that situation, take it into account, and compensate for that person. That absolutely happens. So this is on the physical thing. An example of what I'm talking about, a little disrelated, but it's, that I'm talking about is, it, and I had this myself. I had field trial labs when I first had my two kids. And so, you know, though I'm kind of clueless in a lot of things, it's like, oh, here's the baby, there's my dogs, they can all be together, and no one ever stepped on them, nobody ever, they cleaned up after them, but they were amazing to my kids. I could have put, and these are, you know, friendly labs, these are labs that never would bite anyone or do anything else, but with the kids were out in the yard, and one of the dogs was out there, we were good, because you just knew that these were their kids. These were their little toddlers, and they might get their ears pulled and their eyes poked, and they had bumpers thrown in trees and bumpers buried in the ground just for playing games with these guys. But if anything ever came over that fence to harm these kids, those dogs would have given their lives for them. So I learned early on in my own experience, and I've always told a lot of my clients when they're going to, you know, they have their first baby, they're newly married and they're having a family and all that, and they're all worried because they got this crazy dog that's, you know, just an emphatic hunter. And I always say, you know, just give them a little bit of a chance. Make sure you show them, no, you can't lay on top of them. You can't, you know, fetch their bottle out of their mouth, something like that. You can't do that stuff. You got to teach them that. But if you allow them the space, not, again, to grasp the situation without you constant fretting over it and worry, oh, no, 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 look, he's, oh, no, you know, when you get all fretty and worrisome about stuff, then the dogs go, oh, God, there's something to be worried about here. If instead you relax into that and let them, they are the most amazing babysitters and caretakers, and they will guard those little guys and take ownership of them. And so, you know, dogs do that with infant humans. And dogs with people with various disabilities understand that far better than many of us. Far, far better. So if they're working with somebody that does have some physical limitations, I don't know the level of physical limitation, and I'm not an expert on human, this kind of stuff. But if you let those two work out the vast majority of this, now, can somebody like that, you know, are they going to need help if the dog bolts and runs off somewhere? Perhaps. There may be places where you've got to help them, maybe with some of the training stuff. If they're not able to do it, maybe help a little bit there. But if for the most part you let those two and you let that give that dog an opportunity to figure that person out and connect with that person, they will do more for them than you were aware could be done. They will team up with that person and do some amazing things. And I've seen it. So, you know, there's so many specific situations, but can that happen? Absolutely. And it's no different with somebody that has some learning disabilities. Assuming that we don't have temper involved, where somebody can get angry and lash out at an animal, you know, that's something, and animals would even learn to compensate with that. But, you know, that's just unacceptable in my mind. But if you have somebody who just doesn't get things the same way or as quickly, dogs do not look down on us for that. You know, we might look at it a certain way, but dogs do not. They are the most accepting and the most willing to adjust to the situation and make things work for everybody. And again, if you give them the opportunity to let these two work together, as long as there's no harm, there's no anger, that part's not there. If you let them work on things together and to the maximum ability of both of them, then maybe it won't happen as rapidly as it would with you or me. Maybe it does. Though what can happen right there might just amaze you. But what happens, and I'm not, this is not an area in which I am an expert, all right? But I've just seen a lot, and I know the dogs, and I've watched them compensate for me when they needed to. But if you just don't get in the middle of it, be worried about stuff, feel like you have to be pulling all the strings and controlling everything, if you can step back out of that, as long as everybody is safe and everything's okay, and let them work stuff out on their own without your great knowledge or great caring, that's going to be your biggest key. Give that dog an opportunity to understand, and they will beat the best psychiatrist and the best medical doctor in the world sometimes on doing just connecting with that person on a level that really very few living things can. And then becoming a part of their life and making things better and participating in the things that are important to that person with the alleged, limitation. So that's kind of what I want to say on that. That's overwhelming. And for those of us who don't have some obvious limitation, we can walk through the field normally and we appear to learn things, you know, at the same rate as everybody else. But you know full well that we got some stuff, right? All of us have some stuff that's not exactly right that we kind of keep from the world because, you know, we just don't, it's just embarrassing or whatever it is. And we just, nobody needs to know that we're secretly whatever we are. And those, your dog, if you've worked with your dog, you know, they look at you and they see you exactly the way you are and they are completely okay with it. And as long as there's not a mean thing in there, and you know what? Even when there's mean stuff in there, dogs will still accept some of that. You know, that hurts me to even think about. But I've seen that. Somebody that's too tough and too hard on a dog, and yet that dog gives them 100% of their loyalty and accepts some of the nastiness about them. Because that's the way that they are. You know, I think that's to a large degree why they're here, is to play in our role, a role in our lives, those of us with that ability to have that in our lives, that is often much larger than many people realize. So, yes, dogs, if you have somebody with limitations, physical, emotional, mental, or whatever, I can't think of a better buddy in the world than a dog for them, actually. And they can do some really amazing things. So after that, winter's coming. Election's over. Yeah, if we can just get through the rest of this stuff and have things settle down. I hope everybody's having a wonderful, safe hunting season, and I'll be back soon with the next episode.